Hello, Kevin, you big palooka.
Hey, Carrington, you gumshoe? Seamus?
Use our 1930s slang.
How's it going, sir?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm good and okay.
You are both good and okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What's new with you?
I don't have a dog.
You should get a
dog. Can you say the same?
You should get a dog.
Well, but I'm not going to drive all the way to Texas to get one the way you just did.
Here's how you get a dog. You fly to Texas, and then you drive back from Texas.
Wait, so you went to Texas, and you got a dog and a car?
We rented a car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes a lot. But you didn't rent the dog?
No, I don't think so.
Guess you'll find out.
I mean, all pets are rented, really.
Okay, boy, this conversation went to a weird place quick.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Not a torch or a match in your inventory.
One of those short-faced dogs, or what they're called. Squish-faced dogs?
That's right. The short-faced dogs.
Short-faced.
Which are optimally not supposed to fly because they have breathing problems like on land, so being up on an airplane is not great for them, so it's probably not a big deal, but we decided to make a family road trip out of it and flew to Texas, picked up the dog, and drove home.
Nice. I say well done in your dog acquisitioning.
Thank you. It was good. So you must have some sort of news or fun or something interesting.
Mostly just work. Playing Infocom games and work. Such is my life.
That's good. It's a good life.
It's a good life. It's a hard knock life.
Yes. Okay. Great. Now that that's done, we can talk. Should we talk about our mailbag?
Our bag o' mail. We got a bunch of people email us this time.
We did. Yes.
Our lovely listeners wrote to say hi.
Why don't you tell the listener about them?
Okay, I'll tell the listeners about themselves. Well, one of you, dear listeners, is Robert. Robert wrote to us. We got some great email this time.
Yes,
Robert wrote in to say, I've been listening to your podcast since episode 6. At that point, I listened to 5 different podcasts, but now Eaten by a Gru is the only podcast I listen to and has become, by far, my favorite podcast I've ever listened to.
Does he know that you're allowed to listen to more than one?
No, you are not, Robert. Listen to him.
Okay.
We all us podcasters fight Highlander style. And you're only allowed to listen to us.
All right.
Important to know that. Anyway, he goes on to say, I have played most of the Infocom games to completion, but I usually have to resort to InvisiClues a lot more than either of you have to, and I have never actually seen a packaged copy of an Infocom game because I was born over 10 years after Infocom's downfall, which probably makes me one of the youngest listeners of your podcast. I have played The Witness, that's the game for this month, I've played The Witness, and I finished the game in 2 days without hints, which makes The Witness the only Infocom game, with the exception of Moon Mist, that I completed without hints. Again, thank you for making this the best podcast I have ever listened to. P.S. Aww. I am a blind person, and since I always used a Braille keyboard to play IF, and in Braille, it takes one less keystroke to type take. It's amazing. I'm so, this is awesome. First of all, what a complimentary and lovely email. Second of all, another person comes to the side of take.
Yes. Now, I don't think I mentioned that I told you on Twitter that the last game we played, Leather Goddesses of Phobos, after I was about halfway through it, I was just like, am I a take person? Am I a get person? And I took my transcript in Zoom, copied it into my text editor, and searched for the number of times there was, greater than sign get versus greater than sign take. And I found out that 91% of the time, I type take. Now, I believe in the first episode of this podcast, I adamantly said I was a get person. It turns out that I'm 91% a take person. However, then on further investigation, I discovered that my uses of get were generally things like get out of bed. So
you're really a take person.
I'm really a take person.
Excellent, so, excellent.
Yes.
My people.
I tell you, Robert's email, I read this email before I played the game that we're playing, The Witness, and it gave me some inspiration. I was just like, you know, he finished this game in 2 days. This is going to be an easy game. And it put me in the mindset, and it just put me in this mindset of that this game is going to be approachable. It's going to be something that I can finish in 2 days. And then I did. And part of that reason, I think, was just that Robert letting me know that it was possible.
So if Robert writes in about the next one and says he finished it in 3 hours and he didn't use the letter E, then you'll just do it. Robert can just like make you do things.
I think so. Yeah.
Excellent. Well done, Robert. Robert should make you do some pretty funny things, though. Robert, branch out. Branch out beyond Infocom.
Just stick with the Infocom.
Puppet master, Robert.
Let's see. Oh, yes. Brian Weiser, our friend from Kansas Fest.
Mm-hmm. Friend of the show, in person.
Yes.
He's a guy we actually know in that, what that, the kids call real life.
Real life, IRL, like the kids say. He said, hi, Kevin and Carrington. I often hear Kevin say how much he enjoys playing Infocom games using Zoom for the Mac. It's my favorite, too. But the last version, 1.15, is 32-bit, which doesn't bode well for a future and newer OS. As your Infocom aficionados, please consider using your powers for good. Darn. And find someone to update Zoom to 64-bit Mac app. Perhaps Craig Smith, who does the brilliant port of Frotz for iOS, would assist updating the Frotz Mac version. The Zoom Mac version. I think last time I started Zoom recently, some of my apps have started to be like, they give these little warnings saying like, this isn't
me too
updated. It's not going to work forever. You got to have your people update it.
Get your people onto that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Zoom needs some updating. I bet it'll get done. But
yeah, he gave us links to both Zoom and Frotz and their source code. So when he wants to dive in, we'll have the links to the source code in the show notes. So do it. We have used our powers for good.
Have we though?
That's the extent of our power. We just, you know, jaw into the microphones and that's it. Mm-hmm. Such is the power. We got a really nice email from Adifa, who wrote, "Hello, I've been a fan of Infocom since 1983 when I bought the Deadline folio on a whim for my 10th birthday. I fell in love immediately and went on to play, cheat my way through, 20 more Infocom games over the years. My parents still call every so often to ask if they can throw out my old games and Apple II. The answer is an emphatic no. My enjoyment, however, was always tainted by a sense that I wasn't smart enough to figure out the puzzles on my own. I was convinced that I alone needed so much help. The caution not to compare my real life with my friends curated for Instagram lives doesn't do much for me, but you guys have taught me a similar, more relevant lesson. Don't assume everyone else is breezing through Infocom games without invisi clues. Thanks for putting out one of my favorite podcasts, and especially for your candor about how much help you need to get through these games. It may sound dumb, but it's honestly helped me enjoy these things beyond even Infocom without worrying about whether I am doing it right." That was a lovely bit of email.
Yes,
I was really happy to get that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like with any game, if you are having fun, then you are doing it right. And if that
well put.
And if that means sitting down with a walkthrough and just walking through the game because you don't have the time to solve even the simplest of puzzles, if you enjoy yourself, great. That's what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you're bashing your head against a wall for a year, that's fine too.
You should get out of the game what you want, and that would include saying, "Look, I've got 20 minutes, and I never want to play this game. I'm going to actually read a walkthrough and treat it like a novel." Fine, it's less interactive fiction. Although in a lot of ways, you're still reading it, so it's still interactive. You do you. Just have fun. I happen to like playing the games, but once a puzzle, especially, gets to that point where now it's frustrating, or I'm not having fun, or I just realize like I got nothing in the tank. I got no other ideas. I look up the solution or get whatever amount of invisi clues hints I need. And sometimes the solution I get is something where I'm like, oh, that's ridiculous, and I never would have solved it, and thank goodness I cut my losses and just looked up the solution. And sometimes I smack my forehead and think, I cannot believe I didn't solve that on my own. You know, you read your walkthrough, you take your chances. But mm-hmm. I agree with you completely. It should just be about, you know, have fun in whatever way you want. And all of us need to cheat on occasion. These games are hard, man.
Yeah, they are. Nice email from Michael Lelinski, who said, first, let me say I love the show and have never missed an episode. Thank you, Michael. I usually agree with your assessment of the games, Sherlock notwithstanding. I agree with Carrington, at least. And was very excited when I found out. Don't let it go to your head, sir.
I got take people. I got people agree with me. Everything's coming up, Carrington.
And was very excited when I found Witness was next on your list. Witness was the first Infocom game I ever bought, so it has a special place in my text adventure heart. I was instantly won over by the box art, which, as I was always a mystery buff, and it evoked visions of Raymond Chandler novels and Humphrey Bogart detective movies. I'm hoping the mystery will finally be the one to win over Kevin, as it is nowhere near as hard as Deadline, and the story, atmosphere, and pacing are very good. Being as this was an Infocom game, I love the inside joke of the story setting. Cabeza Plana. Being a Spanish student at the time, I realized this meant flathead. Carrington, I'm counting on you to hold up the mystery lover's end of the review. That flathead thing, I did not notice it, and I thought it was brilliant, because, of course, there's the flatheads in all this work.
I did not notice it either. It's because of this email that I even realized that was the case. It completely flew past me.
Yes.
I am also apparently a flathead.
Would you please read the email with the Boo Commodore explanation? Because I think that deserves getting into it. We can do a little.
We had a Boo Commodore explanation.
Yeah.
So, let's see. What have I got?
John,
I got something from Lawrence.
John. Okay. John wrote a question.
Do I have this?
John, you did a very nice reply.
Well done me.
Yes, John A. wrote in and said, guys, I love the show. I discovered the podcast, and just as I began writing, my own text adventure. Quick question. On the Hollywood Hijinks episode, I heard one of you say, boo, in regard to the C64. What gives with that? I'm actually writing my text adventure on a Commodore 64 emulator. Carrington wrote, but apparently didn't save the email, said, it's a long-running gag that I think really got kicked off at Kansas Fest a few years ago. I'm not entirely certain who, but somebody started to say Boo Atari there, and it caught on. Kansas Fest is an Apple II-centric festival, but there are lots of Atari fans there, too. Atari fans like Kevin. Dun-dun-dun! I recall there was a presentation given that year by Jason Scott, which had a big boo slide in it, but I don't know whether that was the first thing that kicked off the trend or if he was extending it. But for me, that was the first boo Atari I witnessed, and I was quite happy to jump on that bandwagon. However, the whole boo Atari thing caught on, and whenever somebody would mention Atari, it became a habit to say, or even just mumble, boo at them, just sort of inserting it midstream in a conversation without pausing. And with many different fans of many different vintage computer platforms at Kansas Fest, it was often extended to good-naturedly boo anybody's platform of choice. But Atari was the de facto choice because A, it was the original boo target, and B, Atari represents the largest non-Apple contingent of attendees. One platform that isn't well represented at Kansas Fest is Commodore, and that contributed to being a common enemy that everyone could boo. And here's he and Karen should put in a little conversation. Boo Atari. Oh yeah, well, boo TRS-80 to you. At least we can all agree on one thing. Boo Commodore. Ah yes, we are friends again. A toast to the downfall of Commodore. Huzzah!
Wait, I don't even remember writing this.
Okay. As soon as this episode is over, you need to make yourself a doctor appointment.
Apparently. I don't know. I write emails. I don't always pay attention when I'm writing stuff. So I'm like, yeah, reply. There you go. I mean, this all sounds like me.
It does. Yeah, it was. Well, maybe someone hacked your email and wrote a brilliant reply. And you were unaware of it until now.
Hey, I finally got a letter read on this podcast.
That's right.
Amazing. Way to go, me. You do an excellent Carrington, by the way.
Thank you.
So you could just do both half of the show.
I don't think I could do that.
Boo. So we got an email from Lawrence. This is, hello, Kevin Carrington. I'm going to pause right there. And Lawrence correctly didn't put like one apostrophe around the N. I'm okay with no apostrophes. I'm okay with two apostrophes, I guess. But I don't like the just an apostrophe because there's two letters dropped. It drives me. Anyway, a little pet peeve of mine. So well done, Lawrence. So hello, Kevin Carrington. First off, thank you so much for producing the podcast. I'd never listened to a podcast until I saw this one recommended on Reddit, and I took the plunge. I couldn't have asked for a better introduction. You may insert a leather goddess-esque euphemism about being my first here if you care to set the lewdness level high enough.
Ooh, I do. Oh.
I also have a question. I found your pre-spoiler fence descriptions of your gameplay experiences so engaging that I want to buy a couple of Infocom games. However, looking on eBay, I see there's quite a bit of variation, not only between the various editions such as Folio and Greybox, but also between computer systems. Do you think that a particular system got more elaborate or at least more complete examples than other systems? I'm particularly thinking about boxes, browsies, and feelies. I'm anticipating an Atari versus Apple II flame war, of course. Thanks again and happy gaming.
It's already come and gone.
Yes, hey, it'll come again. It'll absolutely come again.
Sure.
I think you answered this one, and I didn't answer because I wasn't actually sure. I wasn't sure if the stuff was the same for
platforms. Absolutely the same. Okay. So assuming Folio version or Greybox version, because things did change between those packaging styles. But say you get the Greybox of whatever, Hitchhikers for Apple II or Hitchhikers for IBM PC or Hitchhikers for Mac or Hitchhikers for Atari. They are identical in the stuff you get, except for two things: the floppy disk, of course, and the reference card that tells you the thing about how to turn on the computer and load up the game and save and that sort of thing.
Okay, so if you see two listings on eBay, say, for two different, say, gold boxes of a particular game, mm-hmm. and one has more stuff than the other, it just means one of them is not complete.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
Thank you for that info. I didn't know that. I did know that there was multiple editions, like there can be a Folio edition, and that will be different than other things, than like, say, later editions. The Witness, for instance, comes in both a gray box and a Folio, and maybe others. I don't know, but at least two editions.
So. Right. Yeah.
People also wrote in about the bug that I found last time to tell me that I didn't find a bug. Mean people wrote in mean email. I'm talking to you, Nathan.
Yes, Nathan said right now the bug hunting score stands at Kevin 8, Carrington 0. And you were so excited.
Sad. I still am excited. So I wrote back to Nathan, and we'll also get to I think Mark wrote in as well. So we got two people writing in about things. So Nathan wrote, where's his email? He says, I'm not done verifying bug reports, but right now the bug hunting score, as you said, Kevin, stands Kevin 8, Carrington 0. It's a shame Carrington was so excited when he thought he'd found one in Leather Goddess as a photo of us. And so was I. It pains me to have to say he was wrong. Both versions of the game get the message right regardless of sex. I guess that, unlike the game, he just must have not been keeping careful track of what sex he was. How embarrassing. But I'm still rooting for him to find a real bug. Good candidates among the games you haven't played yet include Norton Burt, Shogun, and Station Fall. I haven't spent as much time on those. And I wrote back saying, I'm digging my heels in. I insist this is a bug. Like, I'm really sure I only played as a female, and I restarted my game a bunch of times, but I never went back to the original save. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's a problem. I'm insisting. I'm going to play through again. I even wrote to Nathan saying, I'm going to play it again. I'm keeping transcripts. I insist I saw this bug.
But another listener went so far as to send you the source code to prove that you were wrong.
I felt really confident. I'm going to go in and I'm going to show Nathan, just because he is basically the keeper of the bugs doesn't mean I'm not right. Sure. And then shortly after that, Mark writes in to say, release 59 of LGBT does gender correct the cipher message. Which version were you playing when you saw the issue? And he even included the source code of the particular routine that displays the message. Oops. And so even as someone who, like, I don't know this language, but like most programmers, I could muddle through and follow the logic of most languages, even if it's new, because you just, you know, get to learn to read through code and you can pick up what's going on. I just wouldn't necessarily get the syntax right if I was coding in it myself. And I do agree. From what I can see, the routine does appear to get it right. I insist, though, the bug exists in the version I played. So, which again, to remind listeners, I think it was, I don't remember. I know I had a serial number, and I think it was 59 is ringing a bell, so something 59. oh, I guess he even says release 59, but I swear.
I
play them pitch dark. You know what? Maybe it's 4 a.m.'s bug.
says the person who doesn't remember an email that he wrote like 2 weeks ago.
I don't even remember you saying that I wrote that email. I've already forgot it.
Okay.
I've moved on, man. I've moved on.
Speaking of moving on.
Now.
All right. Speaking of moving on, should we talk about The Witness?
Let's do it.
All right.
Witness the quickness as I kick this, as the boy band sang.
Yeah, you definitely need to have your brain scanned, I think. make that doctor appointment. We played The Witness, which was Infocom's seventh game. It was released in June 1983. It is a mystery game. It was credited to Stu Galley, who's the guy who also did Sea Stalker, Bureaucracy, and Moon Mist.
Oh, wait, I didn't know. I knew he did Sea Stalker and Moon Mist, two games that, let's face it, you really don't like.
Yeah, and, I mean, he collaborated on Bureaucracy.
Okay, I was going to say, I don't remember who did
Douglas,
Bureaucracy.
Douglas Adams, I think.
Douglas Adams and Everybody or something.
Right.
So, okay, so he worked on that too. Okay, I didn't know he worked on that. He was like Infocom's treasurer before this, though, or something, wasn't he? Like that?
Hmm.
I think so. Like, he was like a treasurer guy, and then this would have been his first game, and I'm going to dive in and say I'm right about that.
All right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Sea Stalker for me was a no, and Moon Mist was a no. So, yeah, maybe I'm not a huge fan of Stu's games.
Well, so, we don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
We haven't reviewed this one. Who knows? Maybe you are actually a massive fan of his games.
Maybe. Could be. Could be.
So what else do you know about it? One thing I can tell you is I have the folio edition of this.
Ooh,
the fancy one. And it was shrink-wrapped, and I unshrink-wrapped it and recorded it. So I've got both that and my de-shrink-wrapping unboxing or whatever of the mask one, whatever that was, suspended. I'll upload them both to YouTube. I'll make sure I get that done by next weekend.
Yeah, please do that and put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Let's see. The Witness, like I said, is a mystery game. And the box art on it, it's... you can see kind of a silhouette of somebody holding a gun. It says, the witness, somebody's going to take the deep six. You've got a bird's eye low down on the caper and 12 hours to crack the case. Back of the box says, February 1938, Los Angeles. FDR's New Deal is finally rolling. Hitler's rolling too, this time through Austria. But as chief detective for a quiet burg in the outskirts of L.A., you've got other fish to fry. One gilt-edged society dame is dead, and now it looks like some two-bit grifter is putting the screws to her multi-millionaire old man. Then you step in, and the shakedown turns ugly. You're left with a stiff and a race against the clock to nail your suspect, unless you get nailed first. Nobody said a sordid family affair like this was going to be a cinch. Everyone from the knockout heiress to the poker-faced butler may end up in the slammer before it's over. Ahead of you is a Gordian knot of motives and alibis. And the only testimony you can trust is that of your own eyes, because you are the witness.
What's cool about that is I'm holding the version I have, the folio version, and it's mostly the same, but all in different orders. So it was like you were leaping around, reading, dipping into that paragraph, dipping into this paragraph.
I was reading from the gray box version. So,
interesting. Yeah. So they mostly reused the text. It's just they kind of scrambled it around.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about your goodies that came in your
sure.
Box?
Yeah. Like it says, there's a little tab kind of on the front that says free. Inside, an actual police file packed to the gills with revealing evidence you'll need to unravel the crime, which is the case, because this is a folio in a very it's very accurately called a folio edition, because it's basically a folder. So it's much larger than a sheet of paper, but very, very thin. And inside the outer envelope, when you pull it out, comes a dossier, which reminded me, I think I put notes in our show notes this episode, and which, for listeners might not know, all the show notes really are done by Kevin. and so this time I actually put some notes in. I feel good about my links, so there's gonna be extra links in the show notes, because I did like three. The whole package reminds me of the crime dossier books. I don't know if you were like aware of those before, but
no.
ages ago, like in the 1920s, and then they kind of stayed popular for really a couple of decades, were these crime dossiers, or sometimes called murder dossier books. And a guy named Dennis Wheatley is probably the most famous. And he teamed up with a guy named J.G. Lynx, who would design a murder. Like J.G. Lynx would come up with a murder, and Dennis Wheatley would write the book, but it would be in the form of, essentially, imagine an Infocom game that came with all the feelies, but not the game. So you get a dossier, you get photos, you get props, you get all these things, and you're supposed to look at that and read the story and solve the crime as if you're a police officer sitting there at your desk with all the evidence. And then these became really popular for a while. There were these things called the Baffle books, where the same sort of thing except a book. You didn't get like physical stuff. And then a thing in the 1930s called a documentary evidence. And it was just like this whole thing. So I'll have some links to that kind of stuff in the show notes. And a thing called Movable Stationery, which is the a thing put out by the Movable Book Society. People that are really interested in pop-up books and stuff and things like this have a society, it turns out, and they do a newsletter about it. And so a whole bunch of stuff like that. So that kind of thing, if those kind of books spark your interest, dear listener, then you'll find links to stuff to go exploring in the show notes, because I put links in the show notes. So anyway, in my hands now, I've got the folder, and when I pull out of the outer folder from the witness, you get a dark manila envelope, which is supposed to be like a police dossier. And when I pull out all the stuff in it, and there's a ton of stuff in it, this game, like as much as any we've had, really sets the stage when it comes to the included stuff. So here I've got the Bilken Wheatle, which is the fiduciary insurance company. We've seen this one before. This is the thing to fill out if you want to get books, like hint books. And so it's a big fill-out form that you can fold in on itself and stick a stamp on it to send in to get hint books. There's here's the scoop. I'm no fool. Send me the inside dope. And this is a way to subscribe to the New Zork Times, which at this point had yet to change its name to... what did it become? The Status Line. It's a thing for that. And I've got the orange card that is the Interlogic reference card for the Apple II. So this is the thing, as Kevin said earlier, which would be different in this. So this is, in case, an orange one. I've seen these in a few different colors. Unlike later editions, though, this is folded. So normally these came as just a single card, and this is like larger and it folds over. So it's got a little more info than later versions would. But it's essentially that same thing, how to run these games on the Apple II. And then we get to the meat of it, all the stuff that's fun. So first I got the disc itself. That's the sound of a floppy disk. Paint your word picture. So I got a floppy disk. There is an actual matchbook with matches in it from the Brass Lantern. And if you open it up, there's something written inside the matchbook. So it's a very typical sort of clue thing. Weirdly, it's like it's an actual matchbook. And I wonder if that caused issues. Like, we're just going to ship this out with matches with like flammable things on them and just like will sit on your shelf. There is a telegram from Western Union. Now, it's not an actual telegram, it's printed, but it is in the yellow paper, and it's the size of a telegram, but it hasn't had the they didn't go as far as making it the real kind. Like, telegrams used to print out from like a ticker tape kind of thing and you'd stick it on the paper, so they didn't go to that extent. It's actually just a printed, it's like a copy of a telegram
in my paper. But in my research, they did, however, go to the extent of researching. They went to Western Union and asked, like, what did telegrams look like in this year?
Nice.
And then they duplicated the look and feel of a telegram from that time.
Yeah, it totally. Like, I've seen telegrams in movies. So, like, this looks just like a movie telegram. So I bought it. I totally believe it. So you get a telegram. You get a letter written on stationery from Virginia Clayton Linder. And it's a letter from to Monica, to her daughter from Virginia. And it's essentially her suicide note. So you get the suicide note from a lady who's died, maybe suspiciously, but maybe as a suicide, before the game started. You get a massive newspaper, like printed on what I think originally came as like old newsprint. So it feels like an old vintage newspaper. And the register from, it's number 54, February 1st, 1938, final edition, it says. Wish it wouldn't be the last one. Final edition just means the last one of the day. And, but it folds out, like it's the size of an actual newspaper. It's enormous. And, the one of the main headlines is about a ball going on without the guest of honor, this Linder guy, who is the husband of the person who committed suicide. So it kind of talks about that. And it's sort of like the Sherlock Holmes one we play, where you've got an entire newspaper and you won't necessarily know what in this newspaper is applicable to the game and what is just background info. But there's a lot of background info.
When I saw that newspaper, I had flashbacks to that stupid, was it Sherlock game?
It was Sherlock.
That had the newspaper in it. And I was just like, I'm not going to read it. It's first of all, I didn't have the actual thing. I was using PDFs. And I was just like, there's this whole newspaper and it must have 30 articles on these two big pages, and I'm not going to read all this stuff. And it's probably one of the clues is going to require like knowing like the phase of the moon on a certain day or
because Sherlock was like that. Obscure.
What time the tide comes in, you know, or some stupid bit of information, I felt just like angry when I saw that newspaper. But it ended up not being bad. It ended up being interesting but I when researching this in the Digital Antiquarian, he said that except for that a number of stories were created by Infocom for this newspaper, you know, things that were relevant to the game. But the rest of them were all real, taken from a real newspaper of that era, the Register.
Oh, there's some really weird stories in this.
The Register of Santa Ana. And they said the Register of Santa Ana agreed to share several editions from the period on microfiche. And then so Infocom took the stories they wanted to and had the whole thing retypeset so it would look the way they wanted it to. And they said, they had said in interviews that the stories in the paper from the time were weirder than anything that they could have thought up.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like, frozen fruit case ends as defendants pay $300 in fines.
Yeah.
And like Dan Cupid rampant as new record set. Like this, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Cool. I did not, I had assumed they had written the entire thing and just made it seem like a period piece.
Yeah. Nope.
That's awesome.
Yes.
And the other thing you get is the Browsy. And in this case, with the Grey Box editions, most of the ones we've played, the Browsy is kind of like the magazine thing that comes attached inside the box. But this being a folio, the main Browsy, the magazine, is an actual magazine. It comes out and you hold it in your hands. It's printed on cardstock. It's the size of a magazine and it's huge. And it's the National Detective Gazette, Volume 7, Number 2, special this month, an indispensable operative's manual on The Witness. And so it's got a death threat in it, a knock comes at the door and like a story in that, and investigative machine of the future. Speaking of commands is the thing that basically is, which often happens in these browsies, a list of different commands you can do and kind of like a get you started. Like they make the assumption that you've never played an interactive fiction game before, and
which this being their seventh game, the chances were good that you've never played an interactive fiction game before.
Exactly. So this has a whole bunch of like commands. Like if you type examine, which you'll probably use a lot, like you can say examine something or examine something carefully and like what the difference is and to use suspend, which is what they use instead of save. Save also does work in this game, but suspend is kind of the preferred nomenclature.
The default is the preferred one is suspend, which seems weird. I mean, they're still working out the language and how this is gonna,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then on the next page, there's an actual command summary. Following is a list of words, which includes some common verbs, and it's just like it really kind of holds your hands. Like what if you've never done this before? And so here you go. And then it's got some ads like that you can't afford to miss. And so like what kind of pistols to keep and like shooting things and police badges you can get and peerless handcuffs and yep. And on the back page is
all real ads from the time.
Yeah, and it's awesome. Yeah. And it's ads for like detective-y type stuff, and mm-hmm. It's really cool. Like the packaging is amazing. Like total A+. incredible packaging that sets like the tone for a 1930s Seamus type thing. I really dug it. Like, I thought the packaging is just, it's one of those things where just they knocked it out of the park. Like, it's just beautiful. And it's everything you could want to set the stage for this sort of game, not only in all the stuff that's included, but like kind of the way it's put together, the way it's in that, the dossier folder. And it just feels like if you were a detective, this is the stuff you'd have. You'd have your detective magazine you've subscribed to, and then you've got this folder full of stuff that is related to this mystery that you're working on. Like, the matchbook is a thing you find in the game, and so you have the actual matchbook in your hands when you play it. Like, just really, really well done. It's an example of Infocom, and I guess a lot of this stuff was designed by their marketing company or whatever. Did these things, did right. the feelies. Mm-hmm. But boy, they did a good job on this one. It was just amazing.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I enjoyed looking at them, the PDFs. I kind of got the feeling that these things are best experienced in physical form, but not everybody.
This is one of the best ones. This is one of the best ones that we've had, I think, in terms of like how nice it was to sit on my couch with a cup of tea and read through these things to get in the mindset of the game.
Are they real matches? I mean, do they smell like matches?
Let me smell them. They certainly look like matches. Wait, I gotta dig back down to the pile. I don't know. I could peel one off.
Don't light the matches.
You can see, because they look like matches, except they're pink-tipped, now that you say that, not red-tipped.
Aren't they? Okay.
Black-tipped.
I've never been a smoker.
Tell how much, you can see how much smoke. Maybe I only use my manservant lights my pipe for me, actually. Please. What? Sure. Like, I would sully my hands with such a thing. You palooka.
I use a vintage Zippo lighter. I wouldn't. Yeah. Sully my hands with matches.
Exactly.
Cool.
So you know what? They probably are not actual matches, now that you say that. Because this, now that I look at it, the strike on it, mm-hmm. where you would, is not actual, like, it's just printed.
Hmm.
So they're fake matches. Oh, you've ruined it for me, Kevin.
Sorry.
You've ruined it for me. Hmm. Way to break the spell.
The game sold a little more over 25,000 copies before the end of the year it came out.
See, people other than us actually bought games.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah, not all dirty pirates like us.
Amazing.
It came out in June 83, and it sold 25,000 copies basically in 6 months before that year ended. And then it got up to about 35,000 total, I think, before the end of 1984. So that, which was totally great. They were happy with that. Respectable numbers for them. Yeah. So the game itself, should we get into that a little bit?
Yeah, excellent. Why not? Why don't we actually talk about the game too? Oh, you know, it's one thing I did mention. Yeah. It's written by Stu Galley, your favorite writer.
Yeah.
He's the guy who wrote The Implementer's Creed, which I think we've mentioned in previous episodes.
I wasn't listening. Tell me. Remind me.
Okay, so Implementer's Creed he's the guy who wrote the thing that is like the creed, supposedly, of the people. It's kind of like the hackers. Mm-hmm. Hacker's Ethos, Hacker's Manifesto,
Yeah.
Says, I create fictional worlds, I create experiences, I'm exploring a new medium for telling stories. My readers should become immersed in the story and forget where they are. They should forget about the keyboard and the screen, forget everything but the experience. My goal is to make the computer invisible. I want as many people as possible to share these experiences. I want a broad range of fictional worlds and a broad range of reading levels. Mm-hmm. I can categorize our past works and discover where the range needs filling in. I should also seek to expand the categories to reach ever popular taste. In each of my works, I share a vision with the reader. I only know exactly what the vision is, only I know exactly what the vision is, so only I can make the final decisions about content and style, but I must seriously consider comments and suggestions from any source in the hope that they will make the sharing better. I know what an artist means by saying, I hope I can finish this work before I ruin it. Each work in progress reaches a point of diminishing returns where any change is likely to make it worse as to make it better. My goal is to nurture each work to that point and to make my best estimate of when it will reach reach that point. I can't create quality work by myself. I rely on other implementers to help me both with technical wizardry and with overcoming the limitations of the medium. I rely on testers to tell me both how to communicate my vision better and where the rough edges of the work need polishing. I rely on marketers and salespeople to help me share my vision with more readers. I rely on others to handle administrative details so I can concentrate on the vision. None of my goals is easy, but all are worth hard work. Let no one doubt my dedication to my art. So that was the creed of implementers. I don't know if that's supposed to be like a mission statement or something. It's kind of written like that, but I guess that's supposed to be that was at least his vision. So no doubt that represented what Stu Galley, treasurer of Infocom, felt that, and I don't know if this was written before or after Witness. Like Witness was his first foray into writing these things.
So this is the kind of thing you write where you're procrastinating doing the actual work.
Almost certainly, yes.
Let no one doubt my dedication to my art as you're like past deadline, not finishing, you know.
The exactly. Game. I haven't got to that point yet. We're diminishing returns. Leave me alone. Anyway, so he's the guy who wrote that. So, and there you go. And then we have in our hands his first attempt. He disappointed you greatly with his second attempt. He disappointed you greatly with his third attempt. How did he do on his first attempt? We're about to find out as we discuss The Witness.
I enjoyed this. It was okay. It was good. It was,
okay. So you liked the mystery?
I didn't hate it as much as the other, as much as I was expecting to. I'm not a person who enjoys a mystery. I enjoyed this. Part of the reason I liked it, frankly, was that it was short. I finished this game in 2 days, really less than 24 hours. I started on a you know, afternoon on a Saturday and finished it before noon on a Sunday. And basically because that person wrote in and said it was, I could. So I did. So as a mystery goes, I felt it was the best Infocom mystery that I have played.
And I think it's the last of the Infocom mysteries for us. I mean, it's the second one of their mysteries, but I think there are no more mysteries to come.
No, there's one more we have to do. We still haven't played there's another one.
Is there? Oh, yeah. Poor Kevin.
I know.
So many mysteries. I love mysteries.
We have one more. I know you do. I don't remember what it's called right now. Anyway, there's one more to go. So this game is, and part of the reason I found it easy is that it's small. I mean, this is in terms of rooms, in terms of...
Oh, like in terms of the map.
This is by far the smallest Infocom game. There are 20 rooms, 20 locations that you can go to. 81 is average for an Infocom game. And vocabulary was also small, and which I felt. 715 words, where 976 is average. And the small number of objects. There's 22 objects that you can deal with, 36 being the average. So it's small in rooms and vocab and objects. Also, thankfully, small in deaths. There's only two ways to die in this game. It wasn't a big, huge bite with huge thing to bite off with a huge map. And also, I felt, I mean, really, there's four characters in this game. One of them dies in the first scene. So there's three characters in this game. There's three possible people who could have done it. So I felt it was not overwhelming. I felt it was on the easy side for as.
Yeah, there is a, I think in mysteries they call it conservation of characters or whatever. Like you can't, no one's ever going to like a mystery story if the person who did it, if the killer or criminal or whatever, has never been discussed or introduced. They say, oh, I figured out who it is. It's Bob, who we've never mentioned before this page. Like, so it's got to be somebody you know, even if it's somebody you wouldn't suspect. And you're right. In like the entire universe of this game, mm-hmm. there are, by my count, six people in the world. So there's the guy who gets killed.
Right.
There's you. Mm-hmm. There's Sergeant McRobot, who just basically goes, you can say, hey, Sergeant Duffy, go figure out these prints.
Right. So there's... Analyze this item or whatever.
Analyze this thing. Yeah. There's the dead person's daughter, the dead person's manservant, and the person who was caught red-handed fleeing the scene. And you know, it's I don't want to be spoilers, it's never in the history of mysteries been the person who's caught red-handed fleeing the scene.
Right.
So we have a dead guy, a not-going-to-be-it person, and what's left is a manservant and a daughter.
Right.
Now, there also could be, hey, it's a fake suicide. Like, it could be you. Like, how cool would that be? It's like, maybe you turn out to be a killer. So, there's right. possibilities, but probably.
What are the chances you would do something and then not remember it later? That would be ridiculous.
Exactly. So, you can start off this game going, probably it's a coin flip between two people. Maybe something really exciting happens. Who knows? We'll find out after the spoiler fence. But you start off thinking, it feels like a very approachable mystery because. Mm-hmm. You're kind of narrowed down to two suspects, and you've got 12 hours to figure out is it A or is it B.
Right, and I don't want to sound complainy about the smallness of it, because for me, a person who doesn't like when we played Moon Mist, there were all these characters in the mansion, and I didn't. You had to keep track of, oh, here's the ingenue, and here's the grizzled old man, and here's the couple who fight. I don't remember what they were, but I didn't care. You know, there was too many people to keep track of, and they were all supposed to be quirky or interesting, or whatever, and they weren't to me. And here, there was three people, and I could get my handle around three people, you know. So, I wonder though if back in the day, so today, this was fine as a person who knows Infocom, who's played a lot of interactive fiction now. For that I paid nothing for this because I downloaded it from the internet and it was fine. Back in the day, if I had paid $40 for this and finished it in 2 days, I might have been pretty annoyed.
Mm. Especially if it's coming early enough that the memories would be strong of things like Deadline, of Zork, of games where you sit down and have to like chew on them for maybe months.
Right. Yeah.
And this one you solve in your car at the red light on the way home.
Right, right. So, okay, so I've talked a lot about me and how long it took me. How about you, Mr. Mystery Solver? How'd you do with it?
I solved it in one sitting, but it was a relatively long playthrough, like much longer than that implies. That implies like I sat down and I knocked it off in hours. Like I sat down and I really did it in like one contiguous game with a big break, like a break where I actually went to work. So I guess you can consider it two things, but I left it running on my computer. Like I played the game, went into work, came back, finished the game. So I call it two sitting, but within a 24-hour period, two times at the keyboard. So it's mm-hmm. very approachable. And I think, other than Sea Stalker, probably the easiest of the games we've played so far. Easier than Moon Mist, even.
Yeah. No, this is absolutely I didn't cheat on this game at all. I didn't have to look up. I didn't have to cheat, which is probably the first time, even Sea Stalker, I had to look something up because I couldn't figure out how to use the radar or whatever it was. This is the first time that I have not had to cheat, so... So right. yay for me, finally.
I can say, though, when the murder happens... Oh, and that's, dear listener, that's why it's called The Witness. Like, the murder happens in the game, and you're there seeing it. Mm-hmm. And it really only occurred to me after playing the game. I'm like, oh, I guess that's... I'm the witness,
you're
right?
The witness.
I get it.
Yeah. Which get an early working title for this game was Invitation to Murder. So,
ooh, okay.
You are the witness, because you are there, and you see the murder happen, and yet you're such a lousy detective that it takes... a full day.
Literally gets killed in front of you, 4 feet away, and it takes you 8 hours to solve it.
Right.
And the thing is, my hunch, we'll get to it after the spoiler fence, like murder happens, and I wrote down my hunch. Like, hunch, here's what happened. And I was wrong. I was not correct. So it wasn't that I immediately guessed the answer. I mean, I was right in part of it, but I was actually wrong. Hmm. And I will say, not to get spoilery, I don't like the solution to the murder. Hmm. I don't like it as a mystery. I think it was a poorly written story, which isn't to say it's a bad game. Mm-hmm. But if I read this as a novel, I'd be like, oh no, that's you did it incorrectly. That is not a good solution.
Hmm. Okay. I don't have much of an opinion because I don't like mysteries. And so, it seemed fine, I guess. It seemed ridiculous, but there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very ridiculous. Yeah. There's a lot of weight. Like I typed weight a lot in this game. It's a very passive game in a lot of ways. It's like, wait. I spent a bunch of time waiting because I tried to look at things and half the times I'd say like examine, it talked about the, I don't know, the funky pillows or whatever, and I'd say, well, examine pillows. I don't know what the word pillows. Yeah. You're killing me, Parser.
The vocabulary was
so many times.
Small.
Yeah.
Vocabulary was small.
It would describe rooms. It would describe like five things in the room, and four of them would be words it wouldn't know. And like you just, what about this? What about this? What about this? It's like he puts the drink on the bookcase. Examine bookcase. I don't know the word bookcase.
And yet,
drink. I don't know where the drink.
Yeah. Huh. And yet, in order to solve this, you have to look at everything and because there's going to be a couple of items that provide crucial information.
Yes.
So you have to go through the motion of doing examine drink, examine table, examine rug, examine floor, examine, you know, whatever. And 80% of the time, it's just like, doesn't know the word, or it just gives
you some interesting
sort of,
that they didn't err on the side of, you see nothing special about the whatever. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, I don't know that word, it would have been, even if I said examine bookcase, you don't see anything special about the bookcase, or the bookcase doesn't further your investigation, or something like that,
right,
would have felt so much better than I don't know the word whatever, I don't know the word weather, like a bunch of times.
Right.
Like, for instance, here's something I've been scrolling through my transcript looking at it. So here's a examine spools. It looks just like ordinary wire. Examine spool. Which spool do you mean? The green wire spool or the other wire? Green. There's nothing special about the green wire spool, but I know that there's something special, right? So carefully examine green spool. There's nothing special about the green wire spool. Examine green wire. Which green wire do you mean? The green wire spool or the green wire piece? Spool. Which spool do you mean? The green wire spool or the other wire? Green. You must use a verb. Killing me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I did exactly the same thing. I posted it to my Twitter. Sounds like the same area. Examine lights. Sorry, but the word lights is not in the vocabulary you can use. Examine wire. Which wire do you mean? The green wire or the other wire? I'm sorry. The green wire spool or the other wire? Spool. Which spool do you mean? The green wire spool or the other wire? Examine spool. Which spool do you mean? The green wire spool or the other wire? And then the big payoff. Examine green wire spool. There's nothing special about the green wire spool.
Yeah. So there was a bunch of things like that. Like they're just like, or it's like, come on, man. there's also a thing that happens in this that happened in Moon Mist. And now that I'm really like, as we're discussing it, I'm hyper aware, same person, searching something twice. Mm. Holy moly. Mm-hmm. I do not like it when you search something. It happened in Moon Mist where you have to search a thing, and then it's when you find something, and then you search it again and you find a second thing. Same thing happens here. What is up with Stu Galley and the double searches?
I don't know. You're
Which
right.
It sounds though. Like a band, Stu Galley and the double searches, but I would not go see them play because you'd have to buy two tickets and you wouldn't realize they're playing more later until you buy that second ticket. So that's like a thing. That's a Stu Galley thing.
Right.
Double searches.
Right.
Like, that's not okay.
The thing that bugs me, and this is in the manual, it says that you can examine things, and you can examine things carefully, which, as far as I know, is the only use of an adverb in an Infocom game at all, is in these couple of mysteries where you can do things carefully. So I spent, spent just way too much time examining everything and then examining everything carefully. And it's just waste of time, waste of time, waste of time, waste of time. Until
waste of extra time, because the whole difference is it like takes longer.
It takes longer. It takes longer in game time and time ticking away. Except for the one time where it provides interesting, useful information. And yet you've spent just so much just effort typing the word carefully over and over again. And yeah, it pays off once, but was it really that necessary? Did that really add anything to the game other than frustration? You know.
No, but again, like you were saying, like they're like you're using the word suspend to save. They're it's early enough that they're trying new stuff. I guess they're saying, well, okay, what else could we do? We've done the Zork thing. If we're going to do Texas, maybe sometimes you do a cursory thing and sometimes you do a search. But I think it was poorly implemented.
Yeah.
In that I also found, I was like, come on, man.
I'm a detective. I'm a professional. I am good at my job. Let's just assume I do everything carefully. Go north carefully. Inventory carefully.
Check inventory carefully. You notice clearly that you have this. Slowly you look in your pockets. Another thing I noticed in the game was racism. I guess it's a period game. But at the very beginning, I got a little... In fact, one of my first notes, my very first note was, interesting first prompt, because it says, what should you, comma, the detective, comma, do now? And then you get your first prompt. So it really is leading you into the game. Like, there's a lot of things in the documentation presentation and the game that is clearly assuming you've never done this before, which is good. I think that is the right approach, because that kind of thing doesn't in any way take away from the game for somebody like me who's played a bunch of them, but can be helpful for somebody who sits down and it's their first game. So I like that. So I say, well done there. But then my second note is, in all caps, racism, question mark. And so like that, it talks about how the house looks like a mixture of California bungalow and East Asian influences. And then here in the entry is a small Shinto shrine. I'm like, oh, they're really playing up the Asian stuff. And then says, good evening, says a smiling face. I am Fong. Please come in. I'm like, oh, they're going to have an Asian houseman. I'm worried about where this is going. And then like, and I put notes, but like, I'm concerned about this 1930s period appropriate storytelling. And then like it says, Fong's straight black hair and his folded eyes make him obviously Asian, but no definitive nationality. And I wrote, no definitive nationality because you can't tell Korean from Japanese, or because he's just vaguely not North American. Like, just lots of little things like the beginning where I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm okay with this part of it. And I suspect I wouldn't have noticed if I played this game in the 80s, but right now it kind of jumps out at me.
You're so woke.
I'm so incredibly woke is what I'm saying. Yes. So, but that said, I liked the 1930s slang that's peppered through it. It's in the documentation we talked about before, but I wrote down things like, she acts as though you were a masher who just gave her a whistle. And interesting, they spell footprints as two words, which is totally not something I'm used to. All the way through it, it says foot space prints. I'm used to footprints being one word. Right. He unfastens Monica from the lounge, pulls her to her feet, and puts his own nippers on her wrist. Nippers
sounds like something in lewd mode from Leather Comics.
Totally. And one thing that bugged me about the spell, footprints being two words, didn't bug me. I'm like, okay, maybe that's a 1930 spelling I was unaware of. I didn't like the spelling of okay, O-K-E-H.
Yeah.
Drove me crazy. It spelled a bunch of time that word comes up, and it's okay, the threatening note is now on the floor. I'm like, okay. I'm okay with okay.
That was a choice they made,
but okay E-H. Have you ever encountered okay E-H before? No. I've never even seen that before.
No. Okay A-Y, sure, but that's about it.
Yeah. So anyway, the okay, it was bugging me. So I did not like that spelling. Not enough to go and get the source code and like recompile it with a different spelling, but it did bug me all the way through.
Yeah, my only word thing about that sort of thing was the word that I think I've talked about this word before. I put it on a words I learned, but I think I've learned it before in a previous game and forgot it. I don't know how to say it. Escutcheon, flat piece of metal for protection and ornamentation around a keyhole, door handle, or light switch.
Ah, the keyhole.
Yep. Yeah. So keyholes. Anyway, that's the word that I learned. Yeah, but there was some weird stuff with the okay and the footprints inventory management. It had the thing that some of these early games have where you drop things. It's like you're holding five things and you take a sixth thing and then you drop two random objects. And of course, for no reason. And it's like, and you're like you're a detective, and you're just like dropping your gun and your handcuffs and like key pieces of evidence, and you're just like dropping them like a. It's just like he would not do that, you know. And nope. What about the helper guy, the guy who does your the.
Sergeant Duffy.
Sergeant Duffy, just like, hey, Duffy, here, hold this for me. My hands are full. The game was enough just dealing with the thing, but having to just the stupid inventory management. Also, you can't, the word all, there's no all in this game. Take all doesn't work.
There's no all?
Yeah. Which is weird, because it's after Zork. Zork has all. You can take all in Zork, but then they took it out.
They took it when they said take all. They took all.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Yeah. So in that way, this feels like an early game, but because of...
All... in Deadline?
Yes, and this is based on the Deadline.
And this is based on Deadline. Yeah. So they intentionally took it out, what, to make room for all 20 rooms? That's also a weird thing with the rooms. It's a very small map, which I think is appropriate. I like it because it's a mystery that takes place in a house, and I liked it. I didn't want a sprawling, massive map.
Right.
The size of the map was totally fine. Small, but I'm not complaining about it.
Yeah.
It is weird, though, that it's like a 20-room map, and like half the rooms have nothing to do with the story. There's nothing in them. Nothing to touch them. It's like, might as well be 10 bathrooms, although one of the bathrooms is used in the story. But there were a bunch of like settings that were completely unused. So mm-hmm. It might be a 20-room game, but it's really like an 8-room game on a 20-room map.
You're right. Yeah. And there was this, and they could have spiced it up with items that seemed like they could be interesting, but then weren't. There's a broom. It doesn't even have there's a broom. What are you going to do with a broom? If you're going to test a broom, what are you going to do with it? You're going to type the word sweep. It didn't even have the verb sweep.
Right. So why put in a
why
broom?
Even put in something else? Right. Yeah. It was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. 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 So yeah.
In there though, in addition to broom, you can find a mystery book called Deadline. Like it's the story. You find the book in this game that is the story of the earlier mm-hmm. game, although it says it's set in the future because, which I suppose, like, I didn't remember this. And so my notes say, wait, was Deadline a modern game? My memory was that it was like a 1930s, 1940s game, but I guess it actually takes place in contemporary times. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I thought it was an old thing. But you find the book set in the future of the earlier Infocom game. I thought it was a good, neat little thing.
That was cool. Finding it was weird. When I found it, I was, there's a bookcase with books. Examine books. Good idea. But one important book isn't in the bookcase. Like, what does that mean? And then I said, examine important book. You can't see any mystery book here. What? I didn't know it was a mystery book. I don't even know what's important. What are you talking about? So, yeah, it was more weirdness with vocabulary and things.
Yep.
Yeah. I found a little bug. I mean, I'm not the first person to find this, but I'm alone in the garage. And this is after I found that book, the mystery book. Drop mystery book. Fong picks up the book and starts to read. Fong isn't here. Where did he come from? I'm alone in the garage. Where did this guy come from?
I didn't find that bug.
I had another one that was actually quite frustrating. When I was trying to solve the thing, it said you get after you solve it you arrest somebody, you get a letter a month later from your boss saying like how it all turned out. They went to court, you know, did anybody get acquitted or jailed or what happened. Several times I got this sentence: while Monica could have conspired and aided him, she too was acquitted of a conspiracy because, and that was it. And this is the part where
it's because
this is supposed to give you like a clue as to what you missed, what to go back and do better next time. Is it trying to find the motive, method, and opportunity for the crime? And I just got, I just stopped.
So, you just got because.
Yeah, because.
Yeah. Because I said so. Looking through my gameplay notes, and yeah. I don't know that I have much else I can say that's not spoilery, given that it's a mystery.
So, did you finish it? Did you solve the crime?
Yep, solved the crime. Yep. And found the murderer.
Were you satisfied? You sound like you weren't satisfied with...
I was not satisfied. I want to talk about the end. I was not satisfied. My hunch... that I had, like, the murder happens. I wrote down my hunch because that's just a fun way to approach a mystery. And I liked my hunch solution, which kind of, it's hard to talk to non-spoiler, but my hunch solution was kind of part of the actual murder. So sort of almost like a subset, mm-hmm. but I liked my subset better than, like, the part was better than the whole, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a super convoluted kind of, I guess I want to spice, but I was like, it's too much. Too much murder in this murder. Way too much murder. In fact, overall, I think, like, it's harsh because I'm the lover of the mystery games. But I one of my primary notes here is it didn't feel like a professional game. Like, the felt like a professionally packaged game. Like, oh my goodness. But it didn't feel like a polished, professionally written game. And this is the only Infocom game we have played that has left me with that impression. Like, there's been Infocom games where I've had to play Hunt the Verb a bit. There's been Infocom games where I've liked the story less or more or whatever. Like, I've had problems with many games. There's been games I enjoyed this game more than some of the other ones we played. But it's the one where I'm like, boy, they needed some more testing on this. Boy, they needed some more vocabulary on this. Yeah. Like, there's... like, it wasn't a game I was finding a bunch of bugs in, but it felt like a game. Like, it was Stu Galley's first game, and it feels like somebody's first game.
Right.
It really, it strongly feels like...
he didn't follow his creed of letting his testers guide him to making it a better game.
It feels like they didn't have enough testers, period.
Yeah.
Which, again, it makes it sound much more negative than I intend. Like, I actually enjoyed playing this game, and I think it's an easy game. It would make a good first game for somebody because it is such a relatively easy game, and all the packaging, and the game wants to walk you through hey, here's a new game. But this is very much not as good as, like, IF competition games. Like other people are knocking out games.
Right.
This feels like something somebody did, like, is a really amazing Hackfest entry at Kansas Fest. Like, it feels like a quickly written game that was then handed to a packaging company who knocked it out of the park with the packaging. The packaging is amazing, and the game has, like, lots of atmosphere, but very little story and not nearly enough nouns. And it's just, it's lacking. Like, it needs another, this is a great draft of a game, and now it needs a slightly different ending, a lot more props and more characters, and a lot of polish.
Yeah.
Like, this is a great first run, but it needs 3 months more work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's my take.
Another 30 objects, another 100 words of vocabulary, and yeah, it would have been more satisfying.
And not even random words. Go through the transcript, read the story descriptions, pick out 30 nouns expressly described in room descriptions, and stick those items in the game.
Yeah.
It was very frustrating that it was constantly describing stuff that's not in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like he wrote it, like, someone wrote descriptions, somebody's writing the code, and they weren't always talking to each other. Just stuff like that. It's weird because this is the first of all the games we played. Now, we've played a bunch of these games. This is the first one that left me with that impression. Mm-hmm. Where I'm like, wow, this is, I don't know, not like, I mean, and the same thing though, it's a very early game, but it's not as early as Zork. Like, Zork seems more polished than this and bigger than this and has a lot more going on to it than this.
Right.
Also a different sort of thing and what have you. But I'm trying to remember to compare this against other contemporary games. Like I'm very frustrated by the limitations of this parser, but I have to remember that I shouldn't be comparing this to other Infocom games necessarily. I should also compare it against Steve Jackson games and two-word parsers and stuff. And this is still so far beyond those, but I have been spoiled by us playing a couple of dozen Infocom games. And so now that's become my new standard, in a sense.
Sure.
Like, I want them all to be as good as those. And this one isn't, in the game, isn't quite up to the Infocom standard, I think.
I think you're right.
I feel mean saying that.
No, good. Get your mean out. I agree with you. It was an enjoyable little game, but that's not what
I'm glad I played it.
That's not what I'm looking for in an Infocom game, is enjoyable little game. You know, I'm looking for a more immersive experience that's going to take some time. And this, frankly, saying as the non-mystery lover, this was a little too easy and too small. I just felt frustrated at it, but not for the right reasons, you know? That you should be in a mystery, I guess. At one point, I caught someone doing a sketchy thing, and then I couldn't get information from that person about it. I'm just like, I caught you red-handed. You shouldn't be here doing this thing right now. And then that person, I was just like, you know, tell me about the thing. And I got a completely generic answer. And it, you know, it's just, I felt like, as I'm talking to people, interviewing them, their moods would like shift really arbitrarily. It's like at one point this character would be crying, and then the next moment she'd be like dismissive, and the very next move she'd be like yelling at me, you know, to get out, you know, I'm wasting her time. And just like, I just felt like there was no arc in it. Felt like it was like a bunch of like canned phrases that you might get in any random order, and they didn't make sense together. And that's the kind of thing I felt was not satisfying.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And that said, like, there's a lot about this game to recommend it, like, mostly in the packaging and also in the fact that it's a relatively easy one, and maybe it's like a good kind of a Infocom trainer in a sense. Like, you just knock this one out and then sit down and block aside 4 weeks to kind of do one of the more difficult ones. So in that way, it's nice. But if I want an easier game, you can give somebody Moon Mist or something as a trainer, which I know you weren't a big fan of, but I think Moon Mist is a much better game than this one. It's also a mystery. You have multiple times through. Like, how fun would this been if it's the same thing? Like, there's a murder. And just like the movie Clue, we said there's only like three people who could do it or whatever. You could have three versions of the game. And when you play it, you either get it randomly or you pick a thing and you have three different killers and you find different ways. That would have been fun. Like, and so, but you know, that came later. I guess that idea came later. Maybe a lot of people were complaining to him about how short the game is. He says, well, then I'll make the same game three times next time or whatever. I don't know. But I just wanted a bit more. That said, I'm glad to have played it. This isn't a game where I'm like, oh my God, that was a slog. So at least it's short. And so it's, if I was struggling with that vocabulary for weeks and weeks, I think I'd be more negative on the game. But for, 6 hours or whatever it takes to get through this game, it's, you know, you can put up with a lot.
So do you give it a thumbs up?
I'm going to say no. I think not. Like, it can be only because, like, if somebody said, should I play this game or should I play, like, another interactive fiction game of the period, I probably would say no. When in doubt, always go for the Infocom game. Of course, come on, yeah, please. Yeah. It's going to be so much better than that. But looking at it just within the body of the Infocom canon we've played, if I'm going to give a pass to this one and a thumbs up, then it becomes meaningless. I might as well just thumbs up everything. Mm. So if I'm going to hold these to any kind of Infocom standard, then packaging aside, just the game on its own does not live up to that standard. And so I'm going to have to say no.
All right.
I mean, the packaging, yes. Like, I'd say it's a game worth collecting, but a game, it's not that awesome to play.
This game's for having, not for playing.
Kind of, yeah. So, which is unfortunate. But yeah, of all the games, I would say no. I don't necessarily even recommend this game. Like, if you're going to play an Infocom game, pick 15 others we've played are better than this.
Right.
Like, so, yeah. What about you?
I think you swayed me, but I was going to say I would give it, between a waggly hand to a very soft thumbs up, just like, yeah, I guess, you know, if you have,
what a twist, like, you like the mystery game, you love mysteries now.
No, I don't.
We don't know why, it's a mystery.
if you want to play an Infocom game in a weekend, sure, try this one, why not. It's kind of interesting and not that hard. But no, should this be the first one you go to? Absolutely not. There's way better stuff to play. So, yeah, that's it. That's what I have to say.
There
about
you go.
That.
Maybe it was worse because I had the original Folio one. Maybe it set the standards so high. Like, going through it, I was totally excited to play this game because the packaging is so amazing. Like, the browsy and the feelies are so good, like among the best of any of the games we played. And I sat down and I was like, oh, that's it? It's a bit of a letdown, like, after this amazing packaging.
Sure. Makes sense.
Oh well.
Shall we
pick another game and see if we can do better next time?
Let's pick another game. What
I think it's your turn to pick.
Is it?
Yeah, sure.
Huh. All right.
Almost certainly I picked this one. We're playing a mystery. There's no way you picked this one.
No, you picked this one. I would say the two that I have in my mind right now are Wishbringer, which was the third in the Enchanter trilogy, which I'm excited.
Which I think the last like two or three times we've almost picked that.
We've almost picked that. We can continue that trend if you want, because the other one I'm interested in right now is Nord and Bert. Because that's the one I think I played when I was a kid, but then maybe I actually didn't.
I hate to say it. I was going to say, no, we should totally play Wishbringer because we keep almost playing it. I think we should continue to push off Wishbringer because we talked about, I've been anxious to play Nord and Bert since we talked about it last time. And I think maybe it was past the spoiler fence last time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where we talked about how there was a thing. So just in case you didn't join us past the spoiler fence in the last episode, there's like this very clear thing that happens in last week's game, Leather Goddesses of Phobos. Yeah,
there's a puzzle in that game that you
were sure you hadn't played.
I was sure I had never played Leather Goddesses of Phobos, but it had a puzzle in it that I clearly remember from Nord and Bert couldn't make head or tail of it. And I was just like, why is this puzzle in this other game? So I felt like, I still feel like, either did I really play Norton Burt, or did I maybe just, I read a walkthrough of Leather Goddesses, or maybe I played Leather Goddesses when I was a kid and completely forgot about it. So I think I played Norton Burt before when I was a kid, but I don't really know. And it's confusing to me, and I want to solve that mystery. That's the mystery I want to solve.
I like it. I'm excited to play it because it was only last episode when we talked about Norton Burt and this weird puzzle that you may or may not have done before that I learned it's an interactive fiction game. I always assumed, I don't know, for some reason the puzzle of it, either the cover of it made me think this isn't an interactive fiction game. Mm. I've always assumed it was something else. It was either a collection of jokes or comics or something like that. Like looking at it, it has like a Far Side comic on the cover or something that looks like a Far Side comic. And for some reason, I never thought this was an interactive fiction game. Like, it never even crossed my mind. I thought this was something like Cornerstone or whatever. This is a thing we wouldn't be doing because it's not interactive fiction. So I'm excited to play it because I literally learned that it existed like 3 weeks ago.
Great. If I have played this before and my memory of it is correct, I believe that Norton Burt is a game that I knocked out in just a few days after school, maybe, you know, a week. And playing a couple hours a day after school.
Another easy one.
I think so. Unless
we'll be back here on Friday, folks.
I've never played this, and I'm completely, you know, wrong. But I'm interested to find out.
Me too. So I think we should play that for the next one.
Great. We will play Nord and Burt. Couldn't make head or tail of it.
Still bugs me that it's not a Nor, but okay.
I know. It's supposed to bug you, I think. All right. That'll be... That'll be our next game. Excellent. All right. So, dear listener, it is time for us to cross the spoiler fence. The spoiler fence is where we will spoil the game that we are talking about, The Witness. We will give away solutions to puzzles. We will tell you who done it. And we will generally make the game not fun to play anymore. So, if you think you want to play this game, stop listening now. Play the game. Come back at some future time. We'll still be here. And listen to the rest of it. If you have already played this game, or you are sure that you are never, never, never going to play this game, then come with us on the other side of the spoiler fence, and we will talk a little bit more about The Witness.
Especially being a mystery, we're going to spoil the mystery. You're going to learn who done it. So, okay, we're on the other side.
We are on the other side. Here we are.
I did it.
Did you?
I did.
You can arrest yourself in this game.
Oh, okay.
You can also arrest the corpse. So.
Excellent. Okay, I didn't try either of those things. Nicely done. That's funny. So we talked about the annoying stuff. One of the annoying things, while it's still on my mind, is... like we talked about searching twice. So it's Monica you search twice. Monica being the baddie in this.
The first time you find a key and the second time you find a gun, I think.
I'm like, you don't find the gun first. You search her and you're like, wait, let me key. Oh, I'll ignore the massive gun. Like, I can see you spotting the gun first and then finding the key, but it's ridiculous. Or maybe it's supposed to be that she has a gun and because it's like the time you just ignore it, it's not a big deal. Right. But if you're arresting her, it is a big deal. Like, it's... it really bothered me. So it's just like in Moon Mist, double search.
Mm-hmm.
Annoying. Boo to that.
Boo
so when the murder happened, I wrote down my hunch.
Yeah.
So Linder gets shot. So you're in the room. You're sitting across from him. He reaches for a button. It kind of doesn't say he presses the button. So I had when I read the description, I thought he was going for the button. But it is clear that he presses the button because you hear this kind of click thing, or he goes for it or whatever. And there's this the window shatters suddenly and he's shot. And my notes are, okay, this is a scam. He killed his wife because of the affair, and then he set up a fake suicide so he can frame Styles. Because, okay, listener, if you haven't played the game, what happens is Linder, the guy who the murder victim in this, has brought you in because he's claiming that he is being, like, he feels like this guy Styles, who had an affair with his wife, the wife who is now committed suicide. He feels like threatened, like, oh, this Styles is going to try to kill me. And then Styles shows up and basically shoots him through a window and is caught red-handed and blah, blah, blah. Like anybody's going to actually suspect Styles. But my thinking was, because his wife had the affair with Styles, and then she committed suicide, but supposedly the daughter, there's something about the, I guess they're trying to hint that, like, the daughter, Monica, is upset about it. But I thought they were hinting that she didn't believe it was a suicide. So I thought, okay, it wasn't a suicide. He learned about the affair, lost his crap, killed his wife, and faked the suicide. And now, because he can't live with this, he's going to commit suicide, like, with an intricate thing, like get a thing, a mechanism that shoots him and kills him in a way that frames Styles, so that he kills his wife and he sends Styles to the chair, and it's all an elaborate revenge plot. I really thought that that's what it is. And in a sense, it kind of is, because he's attempting to do that, except he's not trying to kill himself. He's trying to, like, just fake an attempt on himself to set up the Styles guy. Right. But not, and I guess because he's upset about the but anyway, I didn't like the fact that it's like, that is what's going on, but that's not really the mystery with the murder, because it's actually his daughter monkeys with the thing, the mechanism, so it actually kills him, I guess, instead of just nearly
grazing him or whatever.
Grazing him, which is like, really? You set this up to not kill yourself, but graze yourself with a bullet out of a clock that you can't aim? That's
right.
Seems,
yeah, there's a gun hidden in a clock shooting the bullet out of the keyhole of the clock, and you have that much control of the bullet and exactly where the dude is going to be positioned when he's sitting in his desk chair that you know you can kill him for sure or graze him for sure. And it, yeah, because they're trying to frame Styles for attempted murder.
Right.
But that's what he thinks. But then the daughter has decided that she just wants to kill her dad for because she's mad at him because of the thing with the mom. So because he didn't treat it.
So it's weird to say, like, I found, like, the game, like you, I found the game very easy. Like, it's an easy game to play. And I kind of, not necessarily fault it for that, but it's too easy for an Infocom game. And yet, I wish the solution to the murder was less convoluted. Like, strip out all the stuff from Monica and make the actual solution the guy killed himself in an elaborate revenge plot. Like, that would have been a more satisfying ending. Like, an ending I would have believed more than, like, this extra layer of stuff they put on it.
Couldn't live without his wife or something, so he wanted the suicide.
No, I think he should be just so mad. Yeah. He was so mad that I think it should have been that he killed his wife, faked her suicide, and now is killing him because he's a psychopath and he kills himself to frame Styles. And you have to go, I have solved the murder and the killer is the victim. Like, that would be more fun. Yeah. And I think that's what it should have. I really thought it was going to be that. I was disappointed it wasn't. I'm like, oh, that's just part of it. And I think your more elaborate solution is just silly. Because it says, like, right at the beginning, you notice the keyhole looks darker than normal. I'm like, okay, bullets fired through a mechanism inside the clock. Like, right away, you sit there and, like, okay, the bullet came from the clock. You press the button, it fired it. So, therefore, he shot himself. And I think he knew that was going to happen. The difference is, no, it turns out he did know it was going to happen, but he didn't think it was going to shoot him. And I'm like, yeah, okay.
And once you see that, you spend most of the game just trying to find the key to open the clock. Yeah,
like, you can't just pry open the clock. You think it's a murder. You're not a PI, a gumshoe. You're the police chief or police detective.
Right.
Just bring Sergeant Duffy and say, I need to see inside this clock. Rip it open. You know, it's a clock. You can't rip open that door. You
right.
have to wait for a key. You pry it open and go, there you go.
Yeah. True.
But there's not a lot of puzzles in this game. Like, there's very few puzzles. In fact, the game is basically wait, follow Monica.
It's like, yeah.
That's it. Boy, you do a lot of following. You do a lot of following in Moonmist as well. Same author. Loves the whole follow people. Like, Moonmist, you basically solve it by picking a person and follow them.
Right.
Yeah. Same thing here.
But when I followed her, I alluded to this before, the spoiler fence, I found her hid in the workshop, and she came in there and she was doing something with the wires in the workshop. And then I was just like, you know, ask Monica about wires. And she's just like,
nothing,
you know, nothing, just like no useful response. Like, I caught you doing this thing. Explain me what, you know, give me some sort of excuse, alibi or something. And I just couldn't get a good response out of the game. And that was frustrating.
Because when you search the room where the murder happens, you find at the window that shattered, supposedly from Styles shooting from the outside, you find glass, you find the green wire and a little bit of putty, like an explosive thing.
Right.
But if the idea was like it exploded, it's supposed to be, you're supposed to look at it and go, as a good detective, you examine the glass and go, hey, this is much glass like outside as inside. So this wasn't a bullet shot from the outside. Like you should be able to look at the glass. Like has Stu Galley never read a murder mystery? Like if this guy outside shot him, then the bullet came through and the glass should all be in the inside. It should tell you, hey, you see glass on both. Like that should be the thing. Instead, you find this little piece of green wire. I'm like, okay, taking my wire, taking my putty. As far as I know, you never do anything with a putty. And then when you see Monica looking at the green wire slash spool that the game insists is there but never wants to tell you about, it's like really cagey about the green spool. Which spool? Which green spool? Which I don't know about green. And then you see Monica do this, and I guess you're supposed to just know that because she looked at the wire, she's therefore guilty and I should follow her. But I really wanted to like approach her right then and say, tell me about this wire or whatever. And she should say something. I needed more at that moment. Right. And the game will give you nothing.
Yeah.
I found that very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And Fong is just there to be the other possible person.
Yeah.
But I never really suspected him. He had no reason.
Well, the thing is, he is sort, he knows about the plot. Well, he knows some, he doesn't know that Monica's planning to murder the father, but he knows that they're setting up a plot to frame Stiles. And I found it annoying that if you figure out the entire game, but at the end you arrest both Fong and Monica, then that's not the right answer, because he gets off easy because he's sent back to his home country, and then she gets off easy because she gets the same sentence he did. So even though really he was a plot,
yes,
in part of the
he
plot
was an
to
accessory
murder.
To this.
He was an accessory to murder. You can't arrest him, otherwise you don't win the game, and Monica gets off easy. You've got, so
I have the exact same problem, because he is an accessory. He's set it up, and he doesn't tell you. Like when you show up as a police detective, he doesn't say, "Okay, I have knowledge. We were doing this thing. There's a gun in there. Monica was involved." He's an accessory after the fact too. He is a criminal. Like you should be arresting him.
Yeah. And then, but if you want to get the best ending of the game, you can. Did you find the medical report?
Yeah, like at the end it says, wait, you mean like, because it says, look at the autopsy or whatever.
Did you find the medical report?
Oh, no, she just mentions it. Like at one point she says, no, because she says, oh, wait, no, my father was actually sick. I can prove it to you or whatever. But by the time she says that, I'm like, no, screw you. You got the nippers on you.
Huh. All right, so I had understood that to win this game, you don't have to find the medical report, but you can. And it gave kind of another layer to the story that maybe you figured out through other means. But on her desk, if you search her desk carefully, there is a medical report saying that he has an advanced cancer, stomach cancer, and he's dying. And so the father's dying, and but then it turns out when you have the report analyzed that it's they can't like find the doctor's name in the phone book, and it might not be 100% legit. And it turns out it's a fake false medical report that Monica had created. So it looks like he's dying. So you know why would she kill her father was going to die anyway. So it wasn't that big a deal, that he died, and because he was going to die from the.
Oh, yeah, because she... Oh, okay, I didn't know there was a medical report, because I totally solved it, got her, but she just talks about the fact that he had advanced cancer or whatever.
Yeah.
But so, I never actually...
And at one point, she claims... let me see if I can find it here. Accused Monica of murder. I don't understand. I believe that medical report. I don't know why the doctor lied to me about the tumor. You think I wanted to murder my own father? I thought he was dying already. Her eyes are pleading with you now, begging you to believe her. And but none of it's true. She had that the report faked up in in Microsoft Word or however she did it.
Right. So I did solve it again after you do the game, because it's such a quick thing. You basically walk around, walk outside, see the footprints, whatever. See her in the garage and then follow her around and just follow her till she goes to the clock. Like,
yeah.
I mean, basically that's the solution, is just be in the garage till she comes in the garage and then follow her around. Like, you don't have to do a lot. Then I thought, okay, well, doesn't that mean I can just wait till she goes to the clock? And you totally can. Like, you can go into his room, wait for him to get shot, and then you can hide. Like, it talks about how there's that the little side thing. What did I hide behind? There was a Wait, I did a walkthrough. I did a quick walkthrough.
File cabinet or something to hide behind?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Where's my walkthrough? I got my Zork transcript. Zork transcript fast. Okay, not Zork transcript. Zork. I'm going back to Zork. why not? The lounge. They call it the lounge. So basically a big Davenport that's in there. So you basically hide behind the lounge. Okay. You're now crouched behind the lounge. I hate that. Okay. And you just wait. You wait, 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 wait. Fong enters. You wait. Just keep waiting, waiting, waiting. Just ignore it. Wait, 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 wait. And then finally, like, she comes in and you stand up. And you accuse her. And she's like, okay, it's true. I helped set up the gun mechanism. But it's like, you can just like wait, hide, and just stand up and accuse her when she goes for the clock.
Interesting. I didn't think to hide. On one of my playthroughs, I followed her in there and didn't hide. And she like stands around and just like fiddles with papers for a while and then huffs out of the room because you're there and she can't do what she wanted to do, which is to, you know, mess with the clock again. And I think at that point, if you do that, you can't win the game. You get into an unwinnable state because she...
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, she doesn't... You don't catch her messing with the clock, so...
Yeah. Only works because I knew she had the key and she was going to go for the clock. I'm like, well, why follow her all around the house? Why don't I just stay where I know she's going to be? So with my knowledge of the future, you just go there and just wait. Wait from like... Right. For 4 hours, just sitting behind the lounge.
I found it
hoping
interesting.
That nobody remembers you there.
Yeah. In reading the InvisiClues after I finished the game, I found it interesting that you cannot, in order to get the key, first you have to handcuff her to a piece of furniture, and you can only do that after midnight. And it was the solution was just like after everyone's tired, when she's less, she will not resist as much.
That's weird.
Yeah, I thought that was strange. So you can't solve it. Doesn't want you to solve the game too early, I guess. Hmm. But I guess you can't handcuff.
I don't think I got to the point where it was always after midnight. Like the first time I solved it, I think it was already after midnight, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I tried to handcuff her, it just worked.
Yeah.
No. I don't want to tell you. You find a receipt for 2 handguns in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to deduce that it's in the name of Nemo Newborn. And I'm like, yeah, it's a flag. So that was my bit of deduction.
It's a flag?
Like a flag, a false name? Like a nom de plume?
Mm-hmm. I see.
Like, that's obviously a flag. I was thinking 1930s, right? Gotta get the right mindset.
Yeah.
This palooka didn't do it. Palooka is my word of the day, man.
Palooka. Yeah, and then she goes to a movie, and then she has the movie stub, which she accidentally drops. And if you check it out, it turns out, you know, she actually did go to the movie. It was a legitimate movie ticket, so I thought that was a nice little feature. I don't know,
but there's so few.
Really,
unless you think it's a weird elaborate suicide thing, there's no way it styles. So the whole time you're like, okay, is it Fong or is it Monica? Is it Fong or is Monica? It's Fong. It's like just hanging out doing nothing. Well, then it's Monica.
yeah. I mean, it could have been Fong and Monica, which it was really, but,
and it kind of was, in a sense, right? So
yeah, hello. It's a game we play.
I mean, it's hard. I was looking through my notes saying, do I have what's the most fair puzzle or unfair? But no, there's almost no puzzle in this game.
Right. I mean, there's the one puzzle of who's done it.
Yeah, but that's it.
That's all.
So it's weirdly a non-puzzle game, which I think maybe also contributed to being a little less satisfying because there aren't those puzzles. Like there could easily be stuff that you have to say, oh, let me get these two pieces together and that will unlock a secret drawer or something, or you deduce just something. Like you're still the detective, like you still could solve puzzles in this, but there aren't any. You're just going to walk around until Monica gets suspicious around the wire and then fail utterly to get the game to tell you anything about that wire and then just accuse her.
I have all these notes that I took from reading the newspaper that did not enter in the game at all. So like, oh, the Linder's business associate, Yukio Matsuyama and Virginia's sisters were Beth and Catherine. It was like, it's all this detail that didn't come into this flat game, you know?
That's true. Yeah, this point. Like, I love the world building of the packaging, but not a lot of it went into the actual game. Like, you didn't really need a lot of that stuff.
Right.
And when you get the brass lantern fake, now I know they're fake matches.
Right. Oh, brass lantern, like in Zork.
Yeah, the brass lantern. Brass
lantern. Okay. It just occurred to me.
Hey, it wasn't until after the game I realized why it's called The Witness, so I'm not really judging. So yeah, there you go. It kind of left me empty, alas.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Can't all be winners. Packaging's great, though. It's one to collect. And then de-shrink wrap, apparently.
Okay, you got to post that video.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, I got that one and the suspended that I sat on. I de-shrink wrapped that one, too. So I'll stick them both on YouTube.
Trying to figure out before we finish up with what the other mystery is. I know there's a listener or two, you know, screaming at their phone about what the other mystery is that we haven't done yet.
It's
looking through the list.
Yeah, the mystery of the missing mystery.
Yeah, might be, could be
cornerstone.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
what? What and why? Maybe we're gonna play Sherlock Holmes again.
I hope not. I sincerely suspect. That's what it's called. Suspect.
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 Which well is, done, you.
Yeah, well, I was looking through the list here of games that we haven't played yet, which there's 13 left.
So few.
Mm-hmm.
If they're all as quick as this one, we'll knock it out by March.
I don't think they will be.
Suspect, yeah. I just looked at. Oh, Suspect. I'm interested to play Suspect because it's the one with the remarkably poorly drawn cover.
Hmm.
To me, it's been always been famous as a game, even before I really understood that what Infocom was. Like from a young age, uh-huh. You know, in my 30s or whatever, like I would look at the cover for Suspect, and you know, you've got like I can't draw. I'm a terrible. Like I used to do an online comic, and so if you look at that, you can see I can't draw. Like just terrible, embarrassing, awful. But there are people that will draw amazingly well.
Yeah, sure.
But in your life, if you're not somebody who can draw well, there'll be lots of people who can draw better than you, mm-hmm. but not necessarily well. They're just drawing better than
you. And if you need cover art for your game, you should hire them, right?
No, you should hire people that can draw really well.
Yes.
So this cover is drawn by one of those people who can draw, like, certainly better than I could do, but not good enough to be the cover of a game.
It's really bad. Like, I guess I never really thought of it before.
Remarkably bad. Every time I looked at it, I was like, wow, whose cousin got this job or whatever? And it's like... It's like sketched out like an idea, but it's done by somebody who, shouldn't be the cover of your game. So I look forward to talking about that one when the time comes.
Well, we already chose a game for next time. You can't switch.
Nope.
Can't switch horses.
And if we did come back with that, then people wouldn't be able to make head nor tail of it.
You're hilarious.
Not necessarily. Okay, so next time we've got Nord and Bert, I mean, like, is it Nord or Bert? No, Nord and Bert couldn't make head or tail of it. Okay, we will see, which is supposedly a interactive fiction game.
We'll find out.
Much to my surprise.
Yes.
But I think that wraps things up. So, yes. Dear listener, this has been, unsurprisingly, Eaten by a Gru, the Infocom podcast. If you want, you can send us feedback about this game or others or anything you want. Tell us why we're wrong about Witness. You can send email to gru@monsterfeet.com.
G-R-U-E.
Or you can hit us up on GRUE. Thank you. Or you can hit us up on Twitter. He is at Kevin Savitz.
S-A-V-E-T-Z. I am at Carrington.
Yes, I'm at Carrington. Spell it as you like. And we will gladly foil your daughter's revenge plot against you if you give us a nice review in iTunes, which people say helps other people find the podcast. I'm still dubious. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for frisking us for evidence, but in a nice way, and letting us use his song.
In a, kind of an allude mode way, really.
In a lewd mode way, and let us use his song as our theme tune, and we appreciate it the way I appreciate you podcasting with me, Kevin.
I appreciate you podcasting with me, Harrington.
I just appreciate you.
Aw, thanks.
Aw.
Hey,
congrats on the dog. Congrats on your little pug.
Thank you. She's so cute.
Okay. I will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
My matches are fake.
Aw. I bet you could still set them on fire, though.
Challenge accepted.